Following is a one-minute introduction, which will be followed by the treatment. To find out about the founding of the Mary Baker Eddy Institute, which was founded in 1988 by William and Helen Wright, please navigate to the menu, which is in the top left corner of every page, and select About, which is near the bottom of the menu. If you would like to contact us in a private, secure manner, please send a message which is obtained from clicking on the Contact button, which is next to the About selection at the bottom area of the menu. This is the end of the introduction. The Extemporaneous Prayer Treatment by the Mary Baker Eddy Institute follows. The topic for this prayer treatment is the system of divine metaphysics. If one has pursued increasing their skills on reading, they will find that the introductions, table of contents, and any quotes that are at the beginning of a book or chapters or even paragraphs are of high importance. Mary Baker Eddy, being an excellent writer, gave us all kinds of tools in order to be able to focus. She provided three very important quotes as an introduction to the textbook, as well as quotations for each of the chapters. And within the chapters, the prolific use of topics, as many as four or five on a single page, throughout the textbook. And if there were very strongly related major topics, she would divide the chapter into sections. If you have not noticed these refinements, we hereby point out to you that the system of divine metaphysics is specifically noted on page 146, which is from chapter 6, which is divided into three sections called Science, Theology, and Medicine. And the next chapter we will focus on is chapter 10, entitled Science of Being, and it has been divided into two sections. One is the regular chapter, and then the section on 32 planks, which relate to the planks for the system of divine metaphysics. And the first chapter referred to, chapter 6, the section on medicine, which is the third section, includes a very important statement, which is an introduction to the system of divine metaphysics. In addition to the wonderful use of tools by Mary Baker Eddy, John L. Morgan was a serious student of Mary Baker Eddy's writings, and he has provided, in his book entitled Dissolving Barriers, The Healing Work of Christian Science, the theme, as he sees it, of the general textbook as a whole and individual chapters. I will read to you the introduction that he has written for Chapter 6, Science, Theology, and Medicine. I shall begin with what he wrote for chapter 5 as it leads into chapter 6. The title of chapter 5 is Animal Magnetism Unmasked. Animal magnetism is the term used in Christian Science to denote all error, but essentially the error of personal sense, personal will. It is this that keeps all humanity in bondage. Christian Science unmasks this attempted personal despotic control of man and shows that animal magnetism has no power of its own and no authority. Unmasking this error at the same time reveals the truth in our hearts and lives, and man is properly self-governed only when he is guided rightly and governed by his Maker, divine truth and love. And that's a quote from Science and Health, page 106. This is God's man. This is a real Christian Scientist. And then the introduction to the chapter that is the introduction to the system of divine metaphysics, chapter 6. His introduction is as follows. Science, theology, medicine. Chapter 6, Science, Theology, Medicine, is such an encouraging confirmation of this point, for it begins in the year 1866, I discovered the Christ science or divine laws of life, truth, and love. That's a quote from page 107. It was Mary Baker Eddy who, in making this discovery, named it Christian Science and wrote the textbook. But we can never act with conviction if we merely accept something that has been told. Therefore, the I that makes the discovery of the divine laws is not only Mary Baker Eddy, but is also any student who has been prepared through the steps of the 5 previous chapters. Unless we make discoveries ourselves, we do not really understand. The first 5 chapters enable the student to participate in an orderly way in what Mrs. Eddy describes as God's gracious preparation of the heart and the mind and the life before the discovery of spiritual reality makes sense to us. What really makes sense is this fact that God operates through divine laws, not haphazardly. The method by which the falsity of material evidence is changed to that of spiritual reality, as we have already seen, is by translation. Theology. At this point, the book shows that the divine laws are beginning to pour into our consciousness, leavening, translating, and transforming everything. The science of God and man comes to us as a true theology. Quote, I and my Father are one, as Jesus defined it. Medicine. And that conviction medicines or heals the human condition of apparent separation from our Father. Science gives us the Christ view, which heals and changes and resurrects everything in the human system. The quote Mary Baker Eddy provides on page 107, which is the introduction to the chapter 6, which includes all three of the sections of science, theology, and medicine, is of greatest importance because it is from the author. And it states, "But I certify you, brethren, that the gospel which was preached of me is not after man, for I neither received it of man, neither was I taught it, but by the revelation of Jesus Christ." That's a quotation from Paul. And the following, "The kingdom of heaven is like unto leaven, which a woman took and hid in 3 measures of meal, till the whole was leavened." And that's from Jesus. Since that is quoted as the introduction for chapter 6, which is entitled Science, Theology, Medicine, those are the three different categories and therefore could easily be aligned with what she means by quoting from Jesus about the 3 measures of meal. We have to consider the science and the theology and the medicine. How do we get to the science? With this extensive introduction, we are now ready to read her exact quote from page 146. The title to this topic is Reduction to System. Divine metaphysics is now reduced to a system, to a form comprehensible by and adapted to the thought of the age in which we live. This system enables the learner to demonstrate the divine principle upon which Jesus' healing was based, and the sacred rules for its present application to the cure of disease. Late in the 19th century, I demonstrated the divine rules of Christian Science. They were submitted to the broadest practical test, and everywhere, when honestly applied under circumstances where demonstration was humanly possible, this science showed that truth had lost none of its divine and healing efficacy, even though centuries had passed away since Jesus practiced these rules on the hills of Judea and in the valleys of Galilee. This is the theme of chapter 10, which is entitled Science of Being, and this is a most crucial chapter, especially one particular section of it, regarding the system of divine metaphysics. This is the theme of the chapter according to John L. Morgan. The phrase science of being is always spelt with a capital S for science because it is God's science, and with a little B for being, because you might say it is our being. The textbook always reserves the capitalized letter for God and the uncapitalized for man as the activity of God. If science is the truth of our being, and all comes from God, this is the science of our being, God's being. God's being is our very being. This is a long chapter full of beautiful details of how the divine comes with Christ's power to illuminate and to transform and to redeem all the details of our human sense of being. It finishes with 32 numbered sections called the platform. Mrs. Eddy introduces this by saying, "When the following platform is understood, and the letter and the spirit bear witness, the infallibility of divine metaphysics will be demonstrated." That's from page 330. The word platform is derived from two words, plat and form. And plat is an interweaving. So the platform offers us interwoven spiritual precepts about the nature of God, the nature of Christ, the nature of the human, and the resolving of the problem of evil. This, therefore, must be something on which we can safely stand. The following are the two quotes by Mary Baker Eddy as an introduction to this important chapter, Chapter 10, Science of Being. "That which was from the beginning, which we have heard, which we have seen with our eyes, which we have looked upon, and our hands have handled of the word of life, that which we have seen and heard declare we unto you, that ye also may have fellowship with us, and truly our fellowship is with the Father, and with His Son, Jesus Christ." That's from 1 John. And from Martin Luther, "Here I stand. I can do no otherwise. So help me God. Amen." This last quote is not from Martin Luther King, but Martin Luther, who lived several hundred years prior. I shall now recite again one sentence from the introduction that John Morgan quoted, which is the introduction from Mary Baker Eddy herself, on page 330 to the 32 planks of the platform. "When the following platform is understood, and the letter and the spirit bear witness, the infallibility of divine metaphysics will be demonstrated." So on page 146, she made the statement that divine metaphysics had been reduced to a system. Now think about that. A system relates to a structure. And a structure with a system is then combined to qualify as a science. Because if it is a valid system and a valid structure, it can be proven by anyone that understands it and applies the laws and rules related thereto. It is just as sure as the law and rule in mathematics that says 3 plus 6 equals 9, or 7 plus 14 equals 21, or 21 divided by 3 equals 7, or 3 to the power of 3 equals 27. No matter who you are, no matter what part of the country you're in, or planet Earth, it doesn't matter what the weather is, it doesn't matter what the color of your skin is, it doesn't matter what language is your native language, what your culture is, or anything else. A science with fixed facts, fixed rules and laws works for everyone the same way. And that's exactly how Christian Science views the healing work of Jesus. And Christian Science explains the science of the healing work of Jesus. The healing work was not miracles. The healing work can be duplicated by anyone who understands the science that Jesus used and follows the rules and laws. We have a button at the top of every page, which is called the header, that is entitled Heal Everything. And therein are provided details that if you have the desire, such that you will apply the discipline required to transform your thought from wherever it is to the dimension of where you want to go, then you can experience healing work that is tantamount to that level to which you want to ascend. Ascend above the false belief of life, truth, and intelligence in matter to the understanding that the real substance is spirit. The real mind is not a pulpy substance that is inside the cranium called a brain, but is the real mind, which is immortal, of the substance of spirit. And you will be following soul, which are the senses of seeing, hearing, feeling, smelling, and taste, based on the substance of spirit and not matter. So you will be cultivating spiritual sense, not relying on material sense. And of course, this leads you to the next step, which is living the qualities of God. And when you live the qualities of God, you will see that they fit into the next step, which is the principle, which includes the system of divine metaphysics. And when you practice the system of divine metaphysics, you will be living the qualities of God. And when you live the qualities of God, you will see that you will arisen above the ups and downs of a chaotic life, because you're going to be guided by truth. And truth is basically your motive and the consciousness of what you are aware of about the purity of truth. And that, of course, leads to the final step, which is love, which means that you have been mothering, as a mother, you have been nurturing to bring to a concept of wholeness, completeness, and fulfillment of all of the seven qualities of God. All the seven terms that describe God, which are called the synonymous terms. And when you get to that state of understanding, you will realize that the love that you learn about as a spiritual love must permeate all of the qualities of God. Just as what you learn about mind permeates all of the other qualities of God. Intelligence is a part of mind. You must approach what spirit is as the real substance from a view of intelligence, not of ignorance. And the same with spiritual senses. It requires intelligence for you to understand and appreciate that the real senses of soul are spiritual, not material. And if you are going to live a life of expression of the qualities of God, you cannot do it based on ignorance. You must do it based on intelligence and wisdom and knowing. And the same with truth. You cannot be ignorant about what truth is and be conscious of it. You have to be intelligent and wise and knowing. And the same with love. So every single quality of every single term for God can be expressed to relate to each of the other terms for God. So it is one grand network, all of which is linked together and cannot be solitary. They each have their own uniqueness, but yet they all blend into this one grand network based on the substance of spirit. So it's permanent. It's not temporary. And with what has just been explained to you, it will be easy for you to contemplate the absolute unlimited combinations of utilizing the various terms that explain each of the seven terms and applying them to other parts of things that describe God. You will be able to keep as busy as you want to be, just exploring how these all work together. And what a beautiful way to invest one's time, because every bit of this work is expanding your understanding of what God is, what man is, and how man is the reflection of the one and only source, which is God. Frederick L. Rawson, one of the three that we know of that had 15-minute appointments, and the healing was complete at the end of the 15 minutes, was looking out a window one day with a friend having a discussion, and while they were engaged, there was a man that drove by with an animal pulling a cart full of rocks. And the driver, for some reason, felt uncomfortable and wanted to examine the tailgate. So he stopped the animal and went back and looked at the tailgate. And while he was back there, something alarmed the animal, and he raised up and dumped the entire load of rocks on the man. When Mr. Rawson observed this, he immediately said these few words: "There is nothing but God." With that, the man rocketed out like a torpedo from underneath the rocks without a scratch on him. By this time, there was a lot of commotion going on outside, but there had not been any chaos at all in the consciousness of Frederick L. Rawson. He knew exactly what he was saying. He knew it to be true. And he knew that God is divine principle, which is totally in balance, totally harmonious. And that one of his ideas, which this man was, could not be the victim of chaos, a victim of an accident. And he was able to get that clear in his consciousness instantaneously, and therefore the healing was just as fast. Mr. Rawson also wrote a book entitled Treatment or Healing by True Prayer, where he addressed 1,315 different ailments and the Christian Science solution for each one of them. It's in that book just mentioned, and it's in the chapter called Applied Treatment. And it's highly recommended you don't read that chapter from beginning to end, because you would only be instilling in your thought 1,315 problems. You only would want to use that particular chapter, which is in alphabetical order of each of those ailments, to find a particular ailment that may be applying to your situation at the moment. He also has given the spiritual analysis of the various main parts of the body. Not the internal, but I'm talking about like the use of the head or the use of an arm or a leg or fingers or whatever. Because each one has a spiritual function that they are performing, if we understand the difference between matter and spirit. I will mention one more very interesting advancement in the thought of Frederick L. Rawson, and that is that he was able to understand how to overcome the belief of time. And therefore, he was able to make a healing effective at the time that the problem first occurred. The details are on the website. The system of divine metaphysics is based on building a platform of understanding, with the 32 planks being the foundation. Mary Baker Eddy stated that she had to hide the actual details of the system because the thought of the individuals that were in Christian Science at that period of time, which would have been somewhere around 1900 to 1910, were not at the level that they would understand the system if she outlined it in detail. So she gave us many clues on what it was about, and it was up to us individually to connect the dots. The one that was the most advanced in doing that is Rolf Witzke, who has been a longtime friend of the Institute, and I knew him personally and had some wonderful conversations with him. We have his writings also on our website. Here is the first plank. The 32 planks begin on page 330 and extend to page 340. And those 11 pages gives us the basics for the foundation. The first one is entitled The Deific Supremacy. 1. God is infinite, the only life, substance, spirit, or soul, the only intelligence of the universe, including man. I have neither seen God nor his image and likeness, neither God nor the perfect man can be discerned by the material senses. The individuality of spirit, or the infinite, is unknown, and thus a knowledge of it is left either to human conjecture or to the revelation of divine science. That is the first plank. And of course, the revelation of divine science is the obvious route, because science cannot be mixed up with conjecture. We can't have 4 plus 7 equals 11 one day, and 4 plus 7 equals 12 on a different day. We cannot guess what anything is in mathematics, and we cannot guess what anything is in the system of divine metaphysics. Einstein made some very interesting observations about Mary Baker Eddy and her discovery. He stated, "Imagine a woman discovered this 80 years ago." Now, she discovered Christian Science in 1866, so that would have placed his comment, if it was stated accurately, about 80 years and not just an estimate, that would place it at 1946. He made these further statements, which apply directly to the topic of this prayer treatment. He stated that science without religion is lame, and religion without science is blind. If you contemplate that, you'll realize that Christian Science is the only religion that is based on science, and the only science that was based on religion, and was the highest form of both, science and religion. Of course, the religion was the religion of Christianity as demonstrated by Jesus in being able to perform instantaneously control over matter, or what was believed to be matter, what was believed to be substance. Jesus had much more to say in his era, but he said, "You are not ready for it." Mary Baker Eddy had more to say almost 2,000 years later, and she said, "You are not ready for it." So she had to hide it in the textbook. All the facts are there, but we have to dig them out and connect the dots. In a prior treatment dated also today, it is entitled Plan, View, Do, and Be. That's B-E. Plan, View, Do, Be. It is a 53-minute prayer treatment that goes into detail about the system of divine metaphysics, showing you how everything works together in one network. We have many more prayer treatments. In fact, we have over 300 of them, and each one of them touch on something in the system. And on the website, at the top of every page, there is a button that says Heal Everything, and we give the details how you can transform yourself at whatever level you are to a higher dimension, so that you will also be able to heal whatever is needed to improve your experience. Einstein stated that when the system of Christian Science is followed scientifically, that it is effective. He had a friend named Dr. Underwood, who was on the Atomic Energy Commission, doing the foolish thing of trying to figure out how to destroy civilization by using atomic bombs. And on that commission, everyone passed on from the belief of radiation except for Dr. Underwood. And when Einstein asked his friend, "How did you survive when everyone else is gone?" he said, "I'm a student of Christian Science and the writings of Mary Baker Eddy." Einstein had been aware of the existence of Christian Science, but had only kind of dabbled in it. But when he saw that it was practical and brought forth the results of something that nothing else could, then he took up the serious study of it. And he started making these comments about it, and many other things he said, and those are on the website. He is listed as an author. Clara Barton, the founder of the American Red Cross, made very interesting statements about Mary Baker Eddy, and they are also on the website. Let's take a look at this first plank and see how we can tie it into other things that Mary Baker Eddy has stated about the system of divine metaphysics, even though it may not be stating those particular words. We know that the system includes the seven terms for God, just like mathematics includes the 10 digits of 0 through 9. And the seven terms for God are clearly identified in two places in the textbook where she gives the definition of God. One is on page 465, which is part of the chapter Recapitulation, which is chapter 14, which is a summary of chapter 1 through 13, and the other is on page 587, which is part of the Key to the Scriptures, which is the glossary. So, under the recapitulation, the very first topic she covers is God. So that tells you how important understanding what God is to all of Christian Science, since recapitulation is a summary of the entire first 13 chapters. She defines God as follows: incorporeal, divine, supreme, infinite mind, spirit, soul, principle, life, truth, love. On page 587, she defines God as the great I Am, all-knowing, all-seeing, all-acting, all-wise, all-loving, eternal, principle, mind, soul, spirit, life, truth, love, all substance, intelligence. Those two definitions don't conflict. She is only bringing out some specific parts of the seven terms for emphasis purposes, which would be a clue that one may want to contemplate them. Imagine the good that the second definition could do for someone that was trying to heal a vision problem. She says, God is the great I Am, all-knowing, all-seeing. In other words, the seeing that we see is not from an organ. It is from the reflection of God, being the source of all seeing. Instead of adopting the limited view of seeing that is promoted by the medical profession, specifically optometrists, suppose that we decided we wanted to be sovereign and not dependent upon someone else for our vision. That would be one of the phrases that we would want to explore. One of Mary Baker Eddy's students wrote her a letter indicating that she was working on a vision problem, and did Mary Baker Eddy have any suggestions? And in the letter response to her student, she said, "Can you focus no matter what comes your way?" Mary Baker Eddy has indicated the importance of having a model in thought that we can refer to correct our thinking if we are given a suggestion that is contrary to a perfect idea of God. We could put in that model that vision is from God. God is the all-seeing God. The vision of God is my vision. I am not dependent upon something or someone to provide me vision. I am going to rely on the vision of God. Now, you can't just say a few words and it's all over and done with, because you have to train your consciousness to accept what is different than what it believes to be true. The universal belief of age brings with it the belief of dimming vision. So if you have a problem with vision, and if you are experiencing the passing of time and might be defined as being in an age of old age, or an era of old age for yourself, then you would also want to work on the belief of old age. The belief of what we might be experiencing may not be as obvious as what one thinks. So we need to do a little digging and think about what other things may be trying to be a cause, and therefore they're really a decoy for the problem. So vision could be a decoy for the problem being the belief of old age. And the book that was mentioned, Treatment or Healing by True Prayer by Frederick L. Rawson, can be of immense value in that area. Because if there is one problem that is related to another one, he states that in the book under the topic that is related thereto. The founder of the Mary Baker Eddy Institute has reviewed in great detail the textbook, searching for all of the places where Mary Baker Eddy utilized the terms for each of the seven. For example, wherever she used the word mind, she underlined and provided it in a book. The same with spirit and soul and each of the seven. So if you want to really do a thorough study of any one or all of the seven synonyms, we have the tools on the website available to do such. She also wrote a separate chapter on each one of the seven terms in her book entitled Your Divinity Revealed. And in that chapter, she shows how all of the terms that Mary Baker Eddy used to describe each one of the seven terms, how they connect together in a network and link from one to another. For mind, I believe there's 61 words that were used to describe the term mind, and all of them have somewhere around 50 to 75 or 80 words to help define what those seven terms are. So you can imagine the combinations if you took even only 50 words per term and you have seven different terms. So you're talking about 7 times 50 just as a total number of terms, but the combination of those 350 words would be almost an infinite number. So you can keep as busy as you want to be in understanding what God is and what the system of the divine metaphysics is all about. Now, we have also a list printed out of just the separate words and opposites to the terms as separate diagrams. And that's on the website under Words and Opposites. Let's take a close look at this first plank and see what other information Mary Baker Eddy has provided that can help us support and analyze and put to practical use this first plank. It says God is infinite, the only life, substance, spirit, or soul, the only intelligence of the universe, including man. So what does she tell us about what man is? This is on page 591 of the glossary. Man, the compound idea of infinite spirit, the spiritual image and likeness of God, the full representation of mind. If we look at Genesis chapter 1, starting at verse 26, it states that God said, "Let us make man after our image and likeness." And then it says, "God made man after his image and likeness." So we had to open up our door of consciousness to let the truth be recognized and to replace anything in our consciousness that has a false representation or a false concept of man and replace it with the truth. So where she says, including man, that God is infinite, the only life, substance, spirit, or soul, the only intelligence of the universe, including man, that means the intelligence of man is from God. In the definition of God, on page 465, she says God is incorporeal, divine, supreme, infinite mind. And on page 591, she states that man is the full representation of mind. And the Bible supports exactly the same concept, that we are made in the image and likeness of God. And if God is omni-intelligent, then what would his image be? His image would not be confined to what is above the shoulders in a skull called a brain. We have an infinite resource for intelligence, an infinite resource for wisdom, an infinite resource for knowing. We have an infinite resource for seeing, hearing, feeling, tasting, and smell. Because it says here, God is infinite, the only life, substance, spirit, or soul. Soul are the senses of seeing, hearing, feeling, tasting, and smell. And substance is spirit, and spirit is flawless. That means our substance is not matter. In fact, on 587, she says, God is the great I am, all-knowing, all-seeing, all-acting, all-wise, all-loving, eternal. And then at the end she says, all substance intelligence. So that's the only source there is of intelligence. All means all. God is omni-intelligence because he is omniscient. And omni means one, only, and all. Omniscience includes intelligence, wisdom, and knowing. We have to know, and then we can properly see. If we can properly see and know, then wisdom is automatic. It comes as a result of the intelligence and the knowing. Mary Baker Eddy gave us another very valuable statement on page 468 entitled The Scientific Statement of Being. She states, there is no life, truth, intelligence, or substance in matter. All is infinite mind and its infinite manifestation, for God is all in all. Spirit is immortal truth. Matter is mortal error. Spirit is the real and eternal. Matter is unreal and temporal. Spirit is God, and man is His image and likeness. Therefore, man is not material, he is spiritual. I know someone that utilized that statement to heal a growth above their eye. One day they noticed that there was a growth above their eye. It was small. They didn't give it much thought. In fact, probably didn't give it any thought. But then they noticed it was growing and growing. They're a Christian Scientist. And that was the only thing they knew, and therefore that was the only solution that came to their thought. And they started using this scientific statement of being. And they replaced the word matter for growth above the eye. In fact, I think they said the belief of growth above the eye. So they said there's no life, truth, intelligence, or substance in the belief of a growth above the eye. All is infinite mind, and its infinite manifestation, for God is all in all. Spirit is immortal truth. A belief of a growth above the eye is mortal error. Spirit is the real and eternal. A belief of growth above the eye is unreal and temporal. Spirit is God, and I am God's image and likeness. Therefore, I cannot have a growth above the eye, for I am spiritual. In a short time, what was growing to be a very abnormal bump, growth, whatever you want to call it, disappeared. There was no scar. Nothing else was done. It was over and done with. We can become completely sovereign from any dependence upon another individual, whether it's some kind of a medical practitioner or even a Christian Science practitioner or some psychologist or psychiatrist or any other form of help that is not directly from God. As Mr. Morgan stated, any truth that comes to us is coming to us directly from God, because God is the only source. God is all there is. There is nothing but God. God is all in all, meaning all source, and that includes all manifestation. I like to call it all existence. Everything that exists, everything, is God, a manifestation of God, everything. Nothing is left out, and there's no limit putting on that where it is, or when it is, or what it is. We just have to understand that God is good, and the definition of good, as stated on page 587 in the glossary, is God, Spirit, omnipotence, omniscience, omnipresence, and omniaction. And recall that omniscience means omni-intelligence, omni-knowing, and omni-wisdom. Think about omni-action. Could there be an accident if all action is from God, and that God is good, and God is spirit? Spirit is flawless. Flawless. Mind is of the substance of spirit. Love is of the substance of spirit. Life is of the substance of spirit. Every way we identify is of the substance of spirit. Principle is based on spirit, not matter. Truth. Spirit. This first sentence is full of power. In fact, Mary Baker Eddy defines power as the good we do and embody. And of course, we just reviewed the definition of good. If we just repeat the words until we understand them, so we're not just repeating words, but we're repeating what we understand, we will have a touch of power, even though we may not understand what we're saying. Because we are seeking the truth, we're seeking a higher level of existence, we're seeking God instead of an individual or a drug or a theory or whatever to help us. And when we open the door to the infinite nature of God, then there is no limitation. Mr. Rawson said he starts out his treatment with everything is possible to God. He starts off that as a foundation. And when you think about that as a foundation, it doesn't matter whether you're talking about or thinking about or contemplating the limitation of time or space or anything else. Everything is possible to God. We are wasting our time trying to figure out a solution because we are talking about a human will, a human perception of the possibilities of a solution. But is God limited to our concept of a possibility of a solution? Do you think God could conceivably create a storm, an earthquake, a flood, any discord, a disease, a sin, a death? None of those are part of the nature of God. Imagine that there appeared to be an accident, say an automobile accident, or any kind of an accident, train wreck, and everyone that observed that or were involved in it started declaring the truth about God. That God was the only power. God was the only substance. God was the only life. God was the only mind. God was the only principle. God was the only love. And God's loving arms were encircling everyone that appeared to be in a discordant circumstance. Imagine what that would do instantaneously. It would reverse the entire physical picture. What seemed to be visible would be replaced with the true symbolism of God at work, bringing harmony instead of chaos, neutralizing any sense of matter or mortal mind beliefs, whether it was individual, collective, or universal. Unification is what we all need to strive to see in our work. Mary Baker Eddy prayed hourly so that she saw only perfection in everyone and everything in her own consciousness. And she prayed 3 times a day specifically for everyone and everything. The hourly was for herself, to have her own consciousness clear. She was attacked constantly, just like Jesus. Who showed up at Jesus' crucifixion? One disciple, his mother, Mary Magdalene, who was healed of being a woman of ill repute, and a couple of others. That was it. He taught thousands, tens of thousands of people. They didn't even count women and children. And in one hillside talk, he taught 4,000 men and 5,000 in another. That's 9,000. And there were probably 3 or 4 children and a wife at each one of them. So you multiply that 9,000 by 5 or 6. So there's probably 40 or 50, 60,000 people there. And remember, he loved children because they were so receptive. They very well gained more understanding from his talks than did the mother and father. So he probably had 30,000 children, maybe 40,000 children that were learning with a hungry heart and an open thought, an open consciousness, just being immersed in the truth that he was dishing out. Imagine the power that was being shared and the unity that there must have been. But they didn't continue. They had a lovely afternoon and evening. But they didn't become a disciple. And the ones that were disciples didn't show up for his crucifixion. No wonder he said, "I have more things to say, but you're not ready for it." They weren't even ready to support what he did teach. What was the one synonymous term for God that Jesus was really living every day of his life in such an obvious way? There are 7 terms: mind, spirit, soul, principle, life, truth, and love. Which one stands out in which he was a symbol, the most strongest way? And obviously he was a symbol for all of them. But the one that stands out, I believe, is love. And the same with Mary Baker Eddy. Because they were both attacked constantly but they didn't get angry or resentful or vengeful or hateful. They returned hate with love. Both of them. Mary Baker Eddy begins her chapter 12, which is Christian Science Practice, with the story of Mary Magdalene. And Miscellaneous Writings, which was one of her most valuable writings in addition to the textbook, on page 8, which is at the very beginning of this, I believe it's over 400 pages, she begins with an article entitled Love Your Enemies. You can learn everything there is about the letter, but if you don't utilize the spirit of love, you're not going to get anywhere. She says you need to know the letter and the spirit, and then you can demonstrate the infallibility of divine metaphysics. The letter and the spirit. In mathematics, you have to have the attitude of love. What is love? Love is nurturing, bringing it to fulfillment. If you don't love and trust the mathematical tables, then you better do some more work in testing them for yourself. If you don't know how to multiply and divide, then use your fingers or an abacus. Most people these days don't know how to add, subtract, multiply, and divide. If they don't have a calculator, and of course most cell phones have the calculator right built in, and most people use a cell phone as their traveling computer. So it's easy for them to multiply and not learn the tables. So they don't understand the relativity if they don't understand how to manually calculate. Then they can really appreciate the relative nature of adding, subtracting, multiplying, and dividing. We recommend that in our Heal Everything, specific steps, and don't try to skip any of them if you want to have the success that we know you can have if you follow the system. Let's look at the next sentence. I hath neither seen God nor his image and likeness. In other words, we have to be thinking about the invisible. God is seen through his manifestation. If we see a man or a woman or a child doing something good, that's God at work. We need to recognize it, that they're doing a godly activity. I've seen children be very forgiving, like a dog. Very forgiving. A dog lives on what? Love. Love. Think about it. Their whole life is provided for them if they express love to their master. And boy, they know how to do it. I I have neither seen God nor his image and likeness. So in other words, we can't see God's real man with visible eyes. We can only see the effect of the reflection of God by the good that God's ideas do. If they're doing good acts, a Pharisee asked Jesus, "What is the greatest commandment of all?" Mary Baker Eddy says that there were hundreds of commandments that they came up with just from the 10. And so they asked Jesus, "What is the greatest of all?" His answer, very simply, "Love the Lord thy God with all thy heart, with all thy soul, and with all thy mind. And the second is like unto it, love your neighbor as yourself." It doesn't do any good to try to love God if you're not loving your neighbor as yourself. Because that's what God is. God is love. If you're not loving your neighbor, you cannot possibly love God. If you don't love what you can see, you certainly can't love what you cannot see. If you don't expand your vision about what God provided to us in the way of one huge network of family, then we're blind, deaf, and dumb. We've lost our three most important senses of seeing, hearing, and speaking. We can't express ourselves. If we don't reflect the qualities of God, we are nothing. Because everything about man is a reflection. And it's a reflection of what God is. The next sentence, "Neither God nor the perfect man can be discerned by the material senses." One can only see what they are. Shakespeare, "There is nothing either good or bad, but thinking makes it so." What is our thinking? Our thinking is a projection of our consciousness. Our consciousness is what we can see. What we can see is what we are. Are we seeing something perfect and spiritual? Then that is what we are. If we're seeing something that is hateful, revengeful, chaotic, that is what we are. What do we want to see? What do we want to be? The name of that prayer treatment that I mentioned previously is Plan, View, Do, Be. What does plan mean? Plan means incorporeal. It's God. It's the Word. It's not something you can touch. You can't touch the number 7 or any other number because they're ideas. A plan is an idea. How do you want to plan your time? How are you going to view everything that is in your plan? Are you going to do it? are you going to be like the majority of people and don't do it? So failing to plan, they're planning to fail. And how can you be it if you plan for it, you view it, but you don't do it? To be it, you have to do it. To be the image and likeness of God, you have to be it. You have to do it. You have to practice it. If you enjoy playing tennis, I used to play 4 or 5 hours a day. I loved it because it was a wonderful exercise. I liked it because it was fast moving. If you want to play tennis, you should take lessons all the time, continuously. Everything you do, you should strive for perfection. Not for competition purposes, but because you want to establish a standard for yourself. Don't worry about what the other guy is doing or how good or bad he is. That's not your business. That's his business. You are your business. Your consciousness is your business. What you think, say, and do is your business. It's no one else's business, and no one else is your business, unless they happen to be a dependent, like a child or someone that has some kind of a problem that needs your assistance. Otherwise, you take care of yourself, your own thinking, your own actions. Let other people breathe. Let them work out their own salvation. So we can't even discern the perfect man unless we are utilizing spiritual senses, not material. It says the individuality of spirit or the infinite is unknown, and thus a knowledge of it is left either to human conjecture or to the revelation of divine science. So this is the very first plank. In other words, it's a clue that this is a foundation for the next plank and the next one. Each one builds on the one previous. So as we study and get a better understanding of the first one and the second one, the first and second together give us the opportunity to understand better the third one. There is a very important sequence in every single thing Mary Baker Eddy did in sharing her revelation with the world. Everything. If you read a particular sentence in the textbook, go back and read what precedes it and go forward what follows it. You know, what is post and what is prior. And make sure you read the topic. And you should read also, unless you've got it memorized, which is so easy to do in many cases, the first introductory quotes to the whole textbook, the theme from John Morgan, the introductory quotes to the chapter from Mary Baker Eddy, in addition to the topic. And you will get so much more out of what you read, along with what I mentioned, the words prior and the words after the particular thought that you're focusing on, because there is nothing in all existence that stands independent of everything else. Nothing. Everything is connected. Everything. Try walking down a busy walkway, maybe a street in one of the big cities, and try smiling. See if anyone else smiles. Be happy. Express your joy in an impersonal way and just let it flow. Be the man that is noted in Genesis chapter 1, starting at verse 26. Not the one that is described after the mist went up, which is starting with verse 4 in chapter 2. Can anyone see clearly? Maybe a fish. If you're a fish, I guess they can see if they've got water flowing over their eyes. I've never been a fish, but I assume they do. Otherwise, they'd be running into each other in the water. Try it. Try expressing joy impersonally to everyone all the time. When you're in a store, do you make any expression of gratitude to the clerk? I wouldn't want to be a clerk. Although I was, when I was going to college, I worked in a grocery store as a clerk, checkout clerk, gas station. I've done those repetitious, mundane things when I was working my way through college. If they're serving hundreds of people, don't you think if you express joy to them, that they would appreciate it? And consideration instead of a terse coldness? Maybe you've been standing in line for a few minutes and you're impatient. Have you ever thought about the fact that you could use that time to be joyful, to think about God, think about who you are as God's image and likeness? You could recite to yourself silently the definition of God, or both of them, scientific statement of being, any number of things you can do to occupy your time with something besides impatience and intolerance. Do you always tip the person that is doing the bagging, even if they don't bag anything for you? In fact, these days they don't even use bags. But that person may be depending on tips to buy their meal that evening. Be thoughtful. If you want to heal anything at all, you have to learn to cultivate a life of giving. I don't mean to blindly give to some organization that probably is a fraudulent organization. You have to search long and hard, usually, to find any organization that is going to utilize the money for what it was advertised to be used for. There was a study done by the fellow that started Doge, D-O-G-E, for the U.S. government And his team analyzed nonprofit organizations, and they found that anywhere from 0 to 3 or 4% is how much got passed through for the cause that they were advertising. And the other 97 up to 100% was put in someone's pocket, or a variety of people that just had it put in their pocket. Had nothing to do with the stated goals of the organization when they solicited the money. And a lot of the money from them came from U.S. tax dollars. So, I don't recommend going out and blindly giving to an organization unless you know the people. And you can even put a restriction on what the money is used for. And of course, the best way to give is to be anonymous, so they don't know who you are and can't give back. A lot of the big donors give because they want to be noted for their ego. They want to be given credit for what they give. If they give enough to build a building in a university or a library, a public library or something, they want their name on it. Now, giving and having your name on it is better than not giving. But giving anonymously is the best, because then you're not feeding your own ego. The Bible says we should tithe. That means a tenth part. Were you a C student in school, college, postgraduate, whatever amount of school you went to? Were you average? Or were you striving for perfection? If you want to strive for perfection and cultivate a life of giving, you're not going to be satisfied with 10%. And you have to work to be having a life of giving, because you have to find people that are really in need, and you need to make sure that you do it intelligently. See, there's a quality of mind. Giving is a quality of love. And try to give something that is not matter but spirit. Do you have any skills that you can share? Can you give an individual a job that needs it? Think of all the different ways that you can help someone and not just give them money and walk away and forget it. Maybe you can be a better value to them if you're not giving them money, but giving them what they need. It could be support, metaphysical support, moral support, supporting them doing good things. The one in charge of making America healthy again. Instead of great again, they call it Maha, instead of MAGA. He got involved in doing good things for civilization because he did some bad things, and he was penalized to give community service. And he got interested in cleaning up the dirtiest river known as the dirtiest river in America. And he made a profession out of it, a career. He became an excellent attorney that specialized in environment, cleaning up the environment. He's done a lot of good for the population of America that were affected by the areas where he was involved. What can we do to give to the community? Maybe we need to run for office and give it some integrity instead of fraud. Look to serve the population instead of ourselves. Look to be honest instead of deceitful. There are so many ways we can give. There's 1,440 minutes a day. How much do we want to give for the benefit of everyone? Richard Strain was working 18 hours a day, and he was going around in circles. He went to a practitioner for the solution. She said, "When are you studying?" He said, "Why are you asking me that?" I'm just thinking what he thought to himself. You know, why is she asking me this? She's supposed to be healing my problem. And he wasn't studying a minute a day. He was supposedly a Christian Scientist, and he wasn't doing any studying. She said, "If you don't study 5 hours a day," and that's just a little over 20%, so that's not being a C student, that's being a B student. She said, "If you don't study 5 hours a day, you're not going to get anywhere." So he's thinking to himself, well, let's see, that means I have 1 hour when I come home to eat, whatever he does to prepare for sleeping, maybe taking a shower or whatever, to sleep, get up in the morning, maybe shave, eat, and that's it. So if he takes 5 hours away, he's got 60 minutes to do all that. After contemplating it and there being no other solution that he could think of, and the practitioner was silent, she said nothing else. When do you study? And if you're not studying 5 hours a day, you're going to get nowhere. He made the decision. He made the commitment to do it. He said by the end of 1 week that everything improved so much that he was able to actually study 5 hours and get normal amount of sleep and get all of his other activities finished every day. And he became a popular speaker in the churches. Now, I'm not recommending that necessarily because most of the churches are under the thumb of a bureaucratic organization that's very corrupt. Who knows what they would do to you? But there are certainly a lot of ways to speak to the world now that we have the internet. The Mary Baker Eddy Institute can always use a volunteer that is really sincere about Christian Science and wants to do some good. If you know anything about computers, know anything about typing, transcribing, we can keep you as busy as you want to be doing very productive work that helps the whole world. We have unlimited ideas that we would like to pursue if we had good people to assist and people that were willing to make some kind of a contribution. I believe that covers the first plank, which is the deific supremacy. The textbook is full of tools that can be utilized, and our system that we recommend under Heal Everything, it's not ours, it's really God's system. That will work no matter what the problem is. And if you put that together with what is already included in the steps to cultivate a life of giving, you cannot fail. You have to have the discipline. You have to have the desire. You have to want to make progress. You have to want to transform from wherever you are to something higher and better. And if you get knocked down, you get back up. You don't stay down. You don't give up. Because you've got a desire to go forward and up to a higher level. So that when you get more difficult situations that you're facing, you immediately recognize it, that it is a suggestion that you have to address immediately. We help you learn how to do it. Step by step. Mary Baker Eddy gave seven prayers called the Diapason of Heaven. And I will recite one to you, and that will conclude this extemporaneous prayer treatment. At the end of that, I will just give the date and time for record purposes so you will know what it is for this particular treatment. Life of giving means we're going to give gratitude as one of those things that we give. And we're going to establish prayers on a regular basis, declaring the truth about ourselves and man and God and events. Be grateful for everything and everyone, because we're all one network of family that should be unified and active. Not be like what Edmund Burke said. He said, good men, about good men, he said, evil triumphs when good men do nothing. Is that the kind of good man we want to be? One that knows there's a problem and just ignore it? Or are we going to take the bull by the horns and solve it? We all should be active, doing something good all the time. Here's the Diapason of Prayer by Mary Baker Eddy. This is the Diapason of Heaven with a focus on life, by Mary Baker Eddy. Life is holy. We must hallow this word, for it is a sacred name for God. Declare often, there is only one life, and that is God. There is no personal life. My life is God, an infinite, incorporeal, all-encompassing, all-present, all-active, everlasting life. Declare that God, good, is the only life of man and the universe. Life is divine. Divine life is my God and my God is life. Life is enthroned in my consciousness. This is the Word of God. Declare all the truths about life. Claim this revealed life as yours. All of life is right where you are right now. Amen. This concludes the extemporaneous prayer treatment entitled System 32 Planks. This is plank number one. It is 25/07/14, which is Monday at 16:34. And today is Monday, and there is nothing mundane about it. It is full of life, the life of God. This is the end.